Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
We've definitely got to get that recording fixed. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is always great to join you at the end of the week to play that game of catch-up that we seem to do so well around here. It is December the 11th. Drawing towards the end of Hanukkah this year. Those of you who celebrate Hanukkah, I hope you're having a great holiday. Of course, Christmas is in the offing, just a couple of weeks off. But for today, the focus is going to be on this newly discovered nexus between immigration and terrorism. That's going to be the topic today. It's generally the topic. But what I find really remarkable is that it's almost as though our politicians and journalists have just discovered for the 5 millionth time that the world is round. All they really needed to do was to read the 9/11 Commission report, and they wouldn't be undergoing this incredible revelation. But unfortunately, it's taken them this long. It has taken them a series of tragic events to start to consider the fact that, as I have been saying for far too many years, there's far more wrong with the immigration system than the failure to secure the Mexican border. And, you know, again, I want to be very clear. We need to secure that border, but that is not the be-all and end-all of what is wrong with the immigration system. You know, if a chain is as strong as its weakest link where immigration is concerned, that chain has very weak and all but non-existent links. And this is a serious problem. That was why last year I wrote an article for the great publication, Front Page Magazine, that I compared border security to an immigration colander. And the idea that simply plugging one hole in the bottom of a colander and not really plugging it that well, I might add, certainly will not convert that vessel with all the holes in it into a bucket. It's an absurdity, but this is the garbage that we have been spoon-fed by too many politicians and far too many in the mainstream media once we secure the Mexican border. So that's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at some of these moving parts to this machinery that is the immigration system. And, of course, if you want to do a bit of reading, a little bit of research into what I've been writing about for far too long ad nauseum, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net. Also, I'm very happy to write for Californians for Population Stabilization, where I am and have been for years, a senior fellow. capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write for Front Page Magazine. I have some recent articles that were from the Daily Caller. Also, please go to the Social Contract. You know, I have a 27-page article for the summer edition, and it focuses on where we are 14 years after 9/11, where we are in terms of the recommendations and findings of the 9/11 Commission, and what we have and have not done. And I've got to tell you, George W. Bush was horrible on the issue, but I could become nostalgic for George W. when I look at what the current administration has done. I think they are trying for the MVP award from ISIS, giving hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens from any country on the planet, as old as age 31, identity documents without a face-to-face interview and without a field investigation. This is a prescription for a disaster. And so you look at, and this is just one of many, you look at the insanity of what they have done, and I have to tell you, it is incomprehensible. I don't know if you remember, but about 2 years ago, the big story was the sequestration of funding by Congress because of the budget issues And as a result of sequestration, the Obama administration said that they were going to have to release tens of thousands of criminal aliens, some convicted of crimes of violence, rape, homicide, drug trafficking, weapons offenses. Cut them loose because Congress took their money, and there we go. And that's really what we've seen from this administration consistently. Temper tantrums, tirades, all about the politics, nothing about America. All about the vote calculus, nothing about Americans. And to be honest, most politicians are like that, which is why the American people have had it up to here with those BS artists who profess to represent us in our best interests. There's a lot of disgust, anger, and frustration, and all of it justifiable for both parties. Let's not pussyfoot around. It was Reagan who gave us the first amnesty. It was Reagan who did not hire more immigration agents, which is why we wound up with all those illegal aliens in the first place. It was Reagan who said that we would have about 1 million illegal aliens come out of the shadows, and by the time it was over with, almost 4 million came out. So it's both parties. George W. Bush, stood with Vicente Fox, the president of Mexico, and declared Americans who were on the border. The Minutemen were vigilantes and all this other happy nonsense. It's both parties. But the stuff that Mr. Obama has done is incomprehensible. In my judgment, and I'm not a lawyer, but in my judgment as a former federal agent, this administration is guilty of conspiring to commit crimes. You'll never get a grand jury to indict them. But if you look at sanctuary cities, they're committing crimes. Aiding, abetting, harboring, inducing, encouraging, shielding from detection. Isn't that what sanctuary cities do? Go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, the section that deals with smuggling and harboring. That's what they're doing. And yet you've never, ever heard Obama come out or anybody from DHS come out and say, what in the world are you doing? They've never gone after the mayor of New York City, Mayor Dumb Blasio, who has given hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens identity documents. New York City got hammered the hardest on 9/11. Hammered the hardest, September 11, 2001. New York is the target of choice. Terrorists are concerned. The idea of giving people who snuck into the country identity documents, even though they are violating our laws, is insane. It is an act of suicide. You know, this nonsense about being anti-immigrant, if God forbid you want our border secured and our immigration laws enforced, has got to stop. The bullying and the lying and the nonsense has got to stop. And it's happening across the board by various organizations as well as by politicians. I happen to be Jewish. I was a B'nai B'rith president back in college. One of the organizations that is affiliated with the B'nai B'rith, a subsidiary of the B'nai B'rith, is the Anti-Defamation League. And a number of years ago, they put an article up on the website accusing me of being anti-immigrant, terrible person, because I want our immigration laws enforced. By the way, the same laws that tell us who to kick out and who to keep out based on threats to our safety and well-being, I might add, incidentally, and you can go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and I'm not going to turn this into a law lecture. That's not what this is about. But what I am telling you is verifiable, it is rational, and it is based in law as well as common sense. It's about aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or aliens who are criminals, gang members, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists. And then we work our way down the list to aliens who would likely become a public charge or aliens who, if they work, would likely be taking the job of an American or by working in a particular industry illegally would be driving down the wages of American workers. What in the world is wrong with that? There's absolutely nothing in the law about race, religion, or ethnicity. But because I said that, you know, enforcing the law is important, and the same laws also permit us to admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants every year, the same laws that I support enable more than 500,000 new citizens to be naturalized every year. But, you know, I'm this terrible person. They neglected in their rantings about me and the people that I was writing for to note that the reason they've asked me to write for them is because of my experience as an agent. It's the same reason that I've been before numerous congressional hearings in both the House and Senate. And I've been called by the Democrats as well as the Republicans, although In all fairness, most of the time I've been called by the Republicans, but at least for two hearings, Sheila Jackson Lee, a very prominent, very liberal Democrat, called me to testify about how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after the attacks of 9/11. It left me flabbergasted when I got the phone call. I hadn't heard about it. And then her chief counsel called me up and said, "Are you aware of the fact?" And I almost smacked into the tree by my driveway. I was so startled and so angry. I also testified for Sheila on the issue of alien smuggling and convinced her, and you'll find this interesting, I think, that alien smuggling is far more than just getting people across the Mexican border, get them across the Rio Grande. Alien smuggling must of necessity include issues concerning immigration fraud, visa fraud, that sort of thing. And in order to convince her that I was right, I wrote her an email, and I said that a properly administered visa requirement, in essence, pushes America's borders out to the embassies and consulates where visas are issued. And when you think about property, when you think about a factory, a school, the White House, your home, if you have a fence on your property, generally that fence is placed at the furthest edge of the property to protect you. You don't have a lot of land and then put the fence right up against your house. That would be silly. So usually we put the fence out as far as we can from the property that we're trying to protect. So I thought about fencing, I thought about what visas are about, and I included the expression that a properly administered visa program pushes America's borders out to the consulates and embassies where they're issued. Interestingly, they not only expanded the hearing to reflect that, but they changed the title of the hearing to reflect that statement. They added the phrase, pushing America's borders out. And to this day, frequently, when there is a congressional hearing, you will see that expression used when the hearing is about visas, pushing America's borders out or pushing out America's borders. So that's how irrational and unreasonable I am. I called up the ADL, this was a couple of years ago, and the first question out of the mouth of this nitwit that got on the phone with me was, "Are you suing us?" I said, "I don't know. You tell me. Do you think I should? You've defamed me. You've made me out to be this villain." I said, "Why didn't you put into your little attack piece the fact that I was an agent, that I've arrested terrorists, that I've been called by both political parties to testify before hearings as an expert, that I've been authorized as an expert witness at federal trials, that I did the job for 30 years, that I worked with Al D'Amato to help create the aggravated felon reentry law that makes unlawful reentry by criminal aliens a 20-year felony? Why wasn't that in this attack piece? All you basically said was, I found some website that hates aliens, and I'm the biggest hater of them all, and that's why I wanted to write for them." Well, maybe not exactly like that, but that was the gist of what they said and what I said to this fool that got on the phone. He apologized and said, "Okay, Mr. Cutler, we understand the point." For 2 years, I didn't see any more articles. I believe it was April of this year. Foxman is gone. They brought in this bucket of ignorants who worked for the Obama administration, which explains a lot. The new director, I don't have his name in front of me. I don't need to give him publicity, good or bad. Again, we're back to the same nonsense. Cutler, the anti-immigrant whatever. And then they actually said that Mike Cutler has linked immigration to terrorism. Can you imagine anything more outrageous? Mike Cutler has linked immigration to terrorism. It's on the ADL website. Anybody who gives them a plug nickel is out of their mind. This is not a group that is trying to eradicate hate, because there's too much hate in this world. Hate is what gets a lot of people killed. Hatred is something that disturbs me greatly. As human beings, we should recognize that we're all part of the same species and work in harmony. You know, I always tell people that this divide and conquer strategy that has beset our country is doing irreparable damage. Democrat versus Republican, this group against that group. We're Americans, folks. We're human beings. And even when we deal with people from other countries, we should be realizing that life is fragile, health is fragile, safety is fragile. It's only sociopaths who could do the damage that we're seeing. Sick, twisted people, under the guise of religion, killing and maiming and all this other insanity that we've been witnessing in the Middle East. These radical Islamist terrorists need to be put down as the rabid dogs that they are. It's just very simple. You don't negotiate with them. You eradicate them. You vaporize them. That's what's needed. But all of this divisive language, pro-immigrant, anti-immigrant, it's not pro-immigrant or anti-immigrant. I would argue that, in fact, if you want the laws enforced, you are pro-immigrant because that's how aliens legally immigrate. That's what the word legally means, that they are following the law. I support those laws. I enforced those laws for 30 years of my adult life. But you dare say we should enforce the side that says, let's keep out the bad guys. Oh, wait a minute. You might be protecting the American people. It's insanity. It's insanity. And so there it is. Mike Cutler has decided to go out there and talk about how immigration is linked to terrorism and vice versa. They need to read the 9/11 Commission report. And I've been watching the programs with a bit of bemusement because, you know, wherever you go, people say, well, do we need to put up a fence? How tall should the fence be? Should it be a double fence or a single fence? Should it have barbed wire on top or concertine wire? Should we run electricity through it, AC or DC? How much voltage? Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Do we need to secure the Mexican border? Absolutely. But is that it? If tomorrow morning we could get the deflector shield off the Starship Enterprise and put it completely across the U.S.-Mexican border, would it stop the problems that we're having with terrorists entering the country, with criminals entering the country, with narcotics entering the country? If anybody thinks that that's going to solve the problem, check yourself into a place where they have padding on the walls. Not one of the 9/11 terrorists ran the Mexican border. Precious few of the any terrorist group ran that border. That's not to say you don't secure the border. You know, this nonsense of what do? You have to do more than one thing at one time, folks. You just can't secure one part of this thing and say, we're done. Again, I come back to the analogy of the colander. I want to read something to you for those who still don't get it. This is the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. The 9/11 Commission had a team of lawyers and federal agents, immigration agents, I believe ATF, FBI, a number of agents from different agencies, who worked with them. And when it was all done with, the 9/11 Commission staff issued several reports. One was about terrorist financing. One was about terrorist travel. I think there were one or two others. I could be mistaken about that. But I just focused on the report about terrorist travel for obvious reasons, because that's where the issue about documents, visas, passports, access to borders, that sort of thing was the focus. So let me read this to you. This is on page 54. Again, whatever I tell you on this program is verifiable. I don't fly by the seat of my pants and spew nonsense because you know what, folks? If I did that, I'd be wasting your time. There'd be no reason for you to tune in. There'd be no reason for you to forward the podcast to your friends, and I hope you do. I hope you become part of my bucket brigade of truth, because we need to be dealing with facts, not fantasy, not accusations, not a lot of the BS that's being spewed by people making money or the people who have an agenda. We need to deal with facts. Page 54. This is under the title 3.2, that's the section, Terrorist Travel Tactics by Plot. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. In so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Think about the case in California right now. San Bernardino, okay? Many of these tactics would remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attack. Now, here's a very important paragraph, and it's short. Pay attention. Take notes. Write it down. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. Let me reread that to you. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It would remain largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. Interior enforcement of the immigration laws. All we've been hearing about is the damn border. The fence, the border, the border, the fence. That's all we've been hearing about. You see, any terrorist who is determined to enter the United States is ultimately going to succeed. Maybe a bunch will get stopped, but some will get through. Today is December the 11th. 4 days ago, we observed the 74th anniversary of the attack at Pearl Harbor by the Japanese Navy. I want you to think about something. On September 11th, 2001, 19 young men from the Middle East, barely out of their teens, killed more people than the Japanese Navy killed on December 7th, 1941. There's a joke about how many fools does it take to screw in a light bulb. So here the question is, how many terrorists does it take to create mayhem? In San Bernardino, California, it took two. At the Boston Marathon, it took two. In Paris, it took eight. These aren't big numbers, folks. This isn't an army. These are individuals. This is why it's called asymmetrical warfare. Terrorists can't confront our military, okay? So they act as insurgents. They get behind the scenes. They sabotage stuff. They plant bombs. They shoot people. That's what terrorists do. And it doesn't take many to create carnage. So you would think that we would focus on the strategies that we need because terrorists will ultimately gain entry into our country. They are here now, I promise you, I assure you. There are probably thousands of them, and not all of them are planning an attack, but they are working to support terrorist acts. Some do it by finding ways to make money, whether it's coupon fraud, whether it's having a real job and contributing money, whether it's selling narcotics, whether it's ripping off banks, whatever they're doing, and the money flows into the coffers of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Boko Haram and all these other terrorist groups. ISIS is selling oil, and they're robbing the banks in Iraq. They commit crimes, and it's happening everywhere. So understand that the problem we have is that there are terrorists who are here. Some terrorists may not commit a terrorist act, but they'll go photograph a landmark that maybe is being considered for an attack. They will provide three hots and a cot, as the saying goes, room and board, to some stranger who shows up because they're told this guy needs a place to crash for a week. These are the ways that terrorists help. Think of how many people were behind the scenes at NASA when we sent three astronauts to the moon. There was an army of thousands upon thousands of scientists, engineers, machinists, you name it. I mean, goodness gracious. All to get three people to the moon. So, you know, you may see the three or four terrorists, but behind them are others. Behind them are others. And that's what the issue is about. Now, what do we do? What happens when they do get into the United States? Well, let me use an analogy, and I'm not a great sports guy, but think about a baseball team. The job of the batter is to hit the ball out of the park, to score a home run. Imagine that the batter is the job of a terrorist, to hit the ball out of the park, to get it right that one time. The job of the pitcher is to not give that batter a pitch that he can hit. Okay? and the ideal situation. In an ideal world, the pitcher is able to pitch a no-hitter, which means that nobody ever makes it to first base. That's law enforcement's job, to make sure that the terrorists don't make it to first base. But now I want you to think about something. How many times, even when those rare no-hitters take place, does the batter manage to hit that ball way out into the outfield, and you see those outfielders do amazing jobs of shagging that ball down and catching it on a fly so that the batter is out? Think about it. Now, here's my question. Imagine a baseball team taking to the field, but not having outfielders to grab those balls that go out over the infielders' heads. What do you think would happen in a game like that? Any ball that would be hit over the infielders' heads becomes an in-the-park home run. Immigration has outfielders. Their job is to backstop the infield, backstop the inspector at the airport, backstop the Border Patrol, because we have 328 ports of entry, and we have Border Patrol agents between those ports of entry to try to make certain that people go through the port of entry, that they don't evade that vetting process. We've heard so much about vetting with the Syrian refugees. We also do vetting at the airports. We do vetting at land border ports and at seaports. So consider that the United States government spends $13.9 billion a year on customs and border protection. They have almost 60,000 employees, and they do one of two things: conduct the inspections or make certain that aliens go through that process. The Border Patrol is supposed to be there to prevent the unauthorized entry, the illegal entry of those who would evade the vetting process for reasons known only to them. And then you've got the inspectors and support personnel who conduct the process. It costs $13.9 billion a year. And yet Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and John McCain, well, we can't deport all these people, you know, Lindsey Graham, well, we can't deport them. So since we can't deport them all, the only thing we can do is give them lawful status. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to toss my cookies. No law gets more than a fraction of a percent enforced. Every time I drive, I speed. It may be 5 miles an hour over the limit, but darn it, I speed. And we don't get caught for that. So does that mean we stop enforcing the speed laws? See, these are these false arguments that we hear. But what's happened is that by not having interior enforcement, the outfield, virtually any alien who wants to get on base, that is to say, stay in the United States and send money home, is able to do so. And among them are some very dangerous individuals, transnational criminals and international terrorists. There is no outfield. There is no outfield for immigration. We have 7,000 ICE agents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Well over half of them are being assigned to cases that have nothing to do with immigration. In fact, if you go to the ICE website, and I was just talking about this earlier today on a couple of programs, I call my visits to the ICE website dumpster diving. Because when you go to the website, they have all this crap on there where they tell you about what a great job they're doing. Oh, you'd be proud of us. We're doing such a wonderful job. And they talk about some painting that was returned to somebody. They talk about some guy that was making counterfeit Gucci loafers and counterfeit wallets, and they arrested him. And they talk about kiddie porn. It seems as though half of the arrests by ICE these days are for kiddie porn. And let me tell you what. Anybody who can do that to a child should be in jail. Maybe they should be surgically modified. I don't know what the solution is. But they are detestable. They are as disgusting as it gets. But why in the world are we using agents from an agency that is so overwhelmed it doesn't even know where to begin and use that limited resource when so many other agencies can do those cases? Postal inspectors, the FBI, city and state police. The list goes on and on. It doesn't have to be immigration. It's almost busy work to keep them busy so that they don't, God forbid, enforce the immigration statutes. You see, this is crazy. Enforcing the drug laws. Well, why do we have DEA? Why do we have ATF? Why do we have customs at the airport, CBP. I understand at the airport you interdict drugs, you interdict drugs. But that should be turned over to DEA. Immigration should be immigration by itself the way it used to be. We need to enforce the immigration laws. These distractions aren't helpful. And now I'm going to tell you something that you're not going to believe. Check it out. You'll see it's true. Chuck Grassley, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, one of my few heroes in the Senate, he and Jeff Sessions and David Vitter, and unfortunately Vitter, I understand, is not going to run for re-election. He ran unsuccessfully for governor of his home state. Apparently he wants out of the Senate. I guess I could understand that. But, you know, good guy. But Chuck Grassley chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he called Ms. Saldana before him to do a hearing because Saldana heads ICE. And you know what the issue was here? You won't believe this, but last year, at the end of the fiscal year, which was October, Saldana returned $113 million to the government. That was money that was supposed to be used to deport illegal aliens. And although she admitted, and by the way, this is new, she actually used the number 15 million, that there may be as many as 15 million. Wow, that's amazing. We've been hearing 11 million for the last decade. There may be as many as 15 million. Try 30 million or 40 million, lady. But she's now admitting there might be 15 million. But you know what the problem was? She just couldn't find any aliens worth deporting or removing from the United States. I kid you not. I kid you not, the Washington Times had an article about it. She returned $113 million because she could not find aliens worth deporting. It's insanity. It is lunacy on a scale that I can't begin to fathom. You look at the 9/11 Commission report. Let me go back and read that paragraph. I'm going to read it until people's eyes bleed. I want people to have this burned in their heads. Abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. And what does that mean? And if you read the rest of the reports, they talk about routine immigration enforcement, stumbling over stuff. You have no idea how many times as an agent you would arrest somebody working illegally and you went back to the guy or the gal's apartment to get their passport or to do whatever, and you find a gun. You find an address book, and in the address book are names, and your eyes light up. You see, people who are here illegally may simply be working illegally. They may be involved with other stuff. But this is like the lottery, and you have to be in it to win it. In 1976, I was a brand new agent. And when you're a brand new agent, you don't go to the bathroom by yourself. You are assigned a senior partner, and they rotate your partner. And every week or every 2 weeks, depending on how they're doing things, your senior partner, at least back then, had to fill out what was known as a C&E, a conduct and efficiency report. Did you show up for work on time? Were you wearing clean, pressed clothing? Were your shoes shined? If some guy ran and you chased him, did you give up after a half a block? Or did you chase that character until you caught up with him 8 blocks away? How proficiently did you conduct the interview? How well were you doing your paperwork? All of this was part of that efficiency report, because during your first year, you can be removed as an agent without cause. They can just say, sorry, Charlie, you're not cutting it. You're out of here. You know, you're on a probationary period. And they also don't want you getting into trouble. So the best way to keep you from getting into trouble is to give you an older partner who has many years under his or her belt, and they're there to keep an eye on you so that you don't do something really bad. So you kind of get on-the-job training, you're being evaluated, you do everything under the watchful eye of that senior partner. And I remember this day came, I got called into my boss's office, and I already had 4 years in as an inspector, so we weren't quite probationary where we could have been fired. But I suspect they could have sent us back to the airport, or God only knows what they would have done. We always wondered what would have happened if we washed out. And they called me in, and my boss said to me, I'm going to give you an assignment. You can do it by yourself. And I was all excited. I said, wow, I wonder what kind of an assignment this is going to be. He said, look, we had this Israeli young man come in with an altered visa. It's visa fraud. When you put the visa under the black light, which was how it was done back then, this is 1976. It's hard to believe, almost 40 years ago. He said he's got an altered visa, and he said, we're sending him home no matter what happens, but I'd like you to take a statement from him just so you get in the habit of taking depositions. If he doesn't want to talk to you, he's protected by the Fifth Amendment. He doesn't have to give you a statement. So if he says, I don't want to talk to you, don't get excited. Just say, okay, fine, and come back down, and we'll put a little memo in the file that you tried to interview him and he refused. Or if he's willing to talk to you, this will be a good opportunity to try to figure out the, you know, who, what, where, when, why, and how. I went to interview him. Initially, everything went fine. He spoke perfect English. He was a young man, about a year or two younger than I was, and I was 27 at the time. And then I asked him about where he had served in the military in Israel, because everybody in Israel serves in the military. And he immediately clammed up and said, I can't speak English. I came back with a translator. Everything was great until she asked him in Hebrew and then Arabic. He was from the West Bank, so we had a feeling about what this was about, and he kept calling Israel Palestine. We did a little bit of digging. We got the Israeli consul general to come down, and as they were interrogating him, I realized that his shirt didn't fit properly. I had him remove the shirt. In those days, detainees did not wear the coveralls that they do now. They wore street clothing. When we took off the shirt, there was a pocket inside the shirt. In the pocket was a piece of paper that had on it an Arabic in Arabic writing, a diagram. It turned out that it was the oil refinery at Haifa. The guy was here to get money to get the explosives. The Israelis were able to capture his cohorts a couple of weeks before this deal was supposed to go down. We prevented the bombing of an oil refinery. It was unbelievable. And it was my introduction to the nexus between immigration and terrorism. It was my introduction to the fact that when you drop that hook in the ocean, you don't know what fish you're catching. It was one of those moments that you never forget. It was one of the most significant investigations that I was ever an integral part of, and this was my very first case. And it blew me away, and it made everybody else think, my gosh, this mundane, routine, nothing deal, Mike was going to take a statement, we're sending him home, turned into a major international investigation. You see, if you're out there and you're doing your job, you're going to stumble upon all sorts of things. And in law enforcement, this is called the principle of randomness. By not arresting aliens who violate the immigration laws, think about what we're doing. We are telling terrorists that if you come to America, as long as you don't get arrested and convicted on top of it, immigration won't take any action against you. It doesn't matter if you run the border. It doesn't matter if you skydive into the United States. It doesn't matter if you stow away on a ship. It doesn't matter. And that's why I wrote another article for Front Page Magazine that I called Immigration Law Enforcement, Why Bother? Why are we bothering to spend all that money to secure the border, supposedly, and it's hardly secure, if it doesn't matter anyway? Well, suddenly, this issue of immigration fraud, which I have been jumping up and down about since day one, well, it's suddenly coming to everybody's mind because they're looking at that K-1 visa, and they're looking at the people who are lying about being a Syrian refugee. And you look at what happened with the Tsarnaev brothers, who claimed falsely a credible fear that if they returned to Russia, terrible things would happen, that they would face persecution or worse. The Tsarnaev brothers lied. How do I know they lied? Well, they claimed credible fear. As soon as they were given lawful status, what did they do? They hopped on airplanes voluntarily and flew back to the country where they claimed they could never go back without facing peril. They lied. There was no regime change. They lied. And nobody at the DHS, the agency I called the Department of Homeland Surrender, did anything. In fact, you may not know this, but a full year later plus, police arrest their sister. And they charge her with threatening to blow up an ex-boyfriend. Maybe she was going to use one of their leftover bombs. God only knows. Why wasn't she picked up? You see, why was it that you have these two guys, and they both had green cards, and one guy actually went on to become a citizen? What kind of background investigation did they do on him? Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, same deal. Just months before he tried to set off that SUV bomb in Times Square, we naturalized him. And at sentencing, the judge said to him, you took an oath of citizenship. He said, yes, I did. She said, but you took an oath of allegiance. And he looked her square in the eye and said, I lied. I hate your country. I hate America. I don't want your freedom. I have Sharia, and Sharia gives me freedom. Well, under the law, when an alien naturalizes, we're supposed to do a good moral character investigation. It goes beyond, have you been arrested? It goes well beyond that. In fact, if it's done properly, to give you the sort of example, if you have an alien who applies for citizenship, and maybe he's had a couple of arrests but no convictions, so the agents go out, they knock on the door, and they say, hey, do you know Charlie Jones from Great Britain? And they say, oh, yeah, we know Charlie. Is he a good guy? Mostly. Well, what does that mean? Well, he gets paid every other Friday, and you know when he gets paid, he gets drunk, and he's a miserable drunk. Sometimes he goes to this brothel, and his wife gets very, very angry. She's threatened to leave him, and then he winds up smacking her around, and the police come, but she never wants to press charges. It's like Stockholm Syndrome, and one day he had a fight with the kid, and he threw the kid's dog out the window, and the poor dog was killed. Well, you know what? This guy has no convictions. But you know what? We would never give him citizenship, because that conduct certainly does not constitute good moral character. That's what happens. So here you have people who supposedly had good moral character investigations. We naturalized them, and months later, they tried to kill a bunch of Americans because they hate America. Do you think they actually did an honest-to-God, good moral character investigation? And understand what that U.S. vote means to an alien, especially one engaged in terrorism. And this is another issue that has never been addressed. When an alien naturalizes, he or she is entitled to take a new name. And I get that. I know plenty of people who came here from Eastern Europe, lots of, you know, friends of my parents and so forth, and they changed their name. Part of it might have been a concern of anti-Semitism, and part of it was they wanted to be American. And they thought the names they had from the old country, as they called it, made them stand out as not being American somehow. And out of a love for America, they changed their names so they would sound more American. Nothing dangerous there, nothing improper. It was kind of respectful. And so they got a new name. But when such aliens get a U.S. passport, the passport only reflects their new name, not their old name. Well, if the person changed their name for an innocuous reason, I wanted to sound American, it's not a big deal. However, if you're dealing with a terrorist, the terrorist now has a brand new identity with a U.S. passport, which is one of the most trusted passports in the world. It's the gold standard. But you see, they're allowed to keep their old passport because we allow dual nationality. So imagine a terrorist who wants to travel to the Middle East. He's in the United States, but now he's a citizen. So he gets a passport, and his new name is John Smith. Boy, that's American sounding. So John Smith flies to Great Britain or Paris or Germany or Belgium, perhaps, on that U.S. passport, and then he books a flight to Karachi, Pakistan. But he books that flight under his old name, Mohammed whoever, puts away the American passport, he travels the rest of the way on his Pakistani passport, does what he has to do over there, whether it's training, whether it's killing somebody, whatever it is that he's doing. And 3 weeks later, he hops on an airplane, flies back to Europe, puts away the Pakistani passport, pulls out his American passport, and flies home. And for anybody looking at the passport, it would appear that he just spent 3 weeks in Europe. Think of the risk, the danger it places us in, because this guy's able to get on airplanes and have access to government and corporate office buildings, get a job that, even if it doesn't have national security implications, might have critical infrastructure implications, and imperil our allies. Maybe he went somewhere to case a target for an impending attack. And when I was with Mike Chertoff, the former head of DHS at Chapman Law School, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we had a discussion about this. And I said, why in the world aren't we at the very least putting the person's original name in the passport so that it, you know, they're not able to cover their tracks this way? And the answer was, you have no idea how political this issue, And you should know that it's my understanding that Canada and other countries do the same sort of thing. This is stupid to a point that I can't begin to comprehend it. And so now we're being told, well, we have a visa process, but we're going to enhance the visa process, the visa waiver program, because now any alien who's been to Pakistan or, I'm sorry, not Pakistan, but Syria, Iraq, and I think there's a couple of other countries, we're going to require a visa from them. I'm willing to bet that more than half the time we will be clueless as to who actually went to Syria or Iraq. We need to end the visa waiver program. You see, there are real-world solutions, and it's not crazy stuff. It's real-world. And so my proposal, and I, in fact, if you go to the website for my program today, I gave you a couple of links. I was on with Ed Berlina over at Newsmax yesterday, the Hardline. And I made a suggestion to him, and I'm going to make the same suggestion to you. It is time that we had in this country an immigration task force. I spent nearly half of my 30-year career on the drug task force, first at DEA Intel and then 10 years as a senior agent with the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. These task forces and the Joint Terrorism Task Force has federal agents from whatever agencies, FBI, DEA, ATF, U.S. Customs, U.S. Marshal Service. Well, actually, U.S. Customs was the old days when I was up at DEA, and then we were merged under ICE. But the idea is you have all these agents from different agencies working to go after drug traffickers. We need to do the same thing with immigration. When people get married to an alien, but they're not living together, they're doing it to get the alien a green card, they need to be prosecuted. You prosecute a few people, you publicize the fact that we've prosecuted the person, you show that American woman or that American man in handcuffs, doing the perp walk, facing 5 years in jail for committing perjury, for conspiracy to enter into a fraud situation. The volunteers that will take a couple of $1,000s to do this will dry up. Right now, there's no downside. You get married, the guy gets the green card, you get the money, then you get an annulment, then you go on your merry way, and you're $5,000 or $3,000 richer, whatever the deal is. But if suddenly we were to start to prosecute these cases, people would say, no, this is too dangerous. Right now, it's a joke. Getting married for a green card is the punchline of a joke. There are movies about it, and they're very cutesy movies. You know, Sandra Bullock in that movie, The Proposal, where she plays the part of a Canadian who happens to be the editor of a book publishing company, and she orders her employee to marry her so she can stay here. And, of course, you know how it's going to turn out. They fall in love, and a fake marriage becomes a real marriage, and they live happily ever after. Folks, this isn't funny. It's dangerous. And we got to go after it. And what I would also love to see us do is to start to arrest illegal aliens the way we did when I was a new agent. If I walked into a factory, because I didn't start out working the major cases, if you walked into a factory and somebody was there with a tourist visa, and even if they came in a month ago and they were given 3 months to stay here, they're working illegally, they got arrested, they went before a judge, we deported them. I remember one day going into a gas station, we had allegations that there were people working illegally in the gas station. I just want you to picture the scene. I go into the gas station with my partner. There's a guy working under a car on a crawler. All the lifts were taken, so they had this crawler. And if you're not familiar with it, a crawler is like a block of wood with small little wheels, almost like the size of roller skate wheels, so they can slide under the car to see what's wrong. So this guy wearing that jumpsuit that we've all seen gas station attendants wear, although I guess now that there are fewer and fewer gas stations that fix cars as they get more and more complex and people tend to go to their own dealers. But in the old days, you know, the typical gas station that would do your oil change and rotate the tires and fix a water pump or whatever. So here's the mechanic under the car, and I kick his boot. I said, hey, I need to talk to you. So the guy comes out from under the car, covered head to foot in grease. I mean, this guy was filthy. If you could have wrung him out, you could have filled the crankcase of an engine with the motor oil that was all over this guy. And I tell him, yeah, it's good to see you. He said, good to see you. What can I do to help you? And I said, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm an immigration agent. And I kid you not, I'm not making this up. The guy looks at me, looks at my partner. He said, I know this doesn't look like what it really is, but I really don't work here. I want you to stop and think about that. I said, you don't work here. He said, no. I said, what were you doing under the car? I was looking for something. I said, I know. You dropped your contact lens. Now, my partner thought it was very funny, but the reality was we found the guy's passport, and he had entered the United States on a tourist visa. He was in status time-wise, but he had no permission to work. We arrested him. He went before an immigration judge, and he was on an airplane home by the end of the week. We ought to be doing this especially for aliens who are here from countries that sponsor terrorism. Donald Trump started a firestorm with his talk about going after Muslims. Let us start by narrowing down that haystack of aliens who are here from countries that traditionally sponsor terrorism. It will do two things. Number one, you will shrink this huge haystack in which some very deadly needles are hiding. Number two, you will get informants. You will have people desperate to not go home. We've had cases where people were so eager to not go home, it wasn't a matter of getting them to talk, it was about getting them to stop talking, you see. So if you really want to find out what's going on in the communities, and now, and I'm really surprised and disheartened that James Comey, the head of the FBI, at an open hearing said that there are many emails that they have found, many files and computers, that because of encryption they can't open. I hope he was saying it to throw off the bad guys. But if this is really the case, this is a very serious problem, and this shouldn't be discussed publicly. This is really the kind of thing that should stay behind closed doors. But I want you to think about something. If there is truly a problem with encryption and computers so that we don't know what's going on, go back to basics. Go back to human intelligence. And, you know, when the politicians talk about it, they don't know what intelligence is. Then again, it's pretty obvious why they don't know what intelligence is, if you get my drift. But they've never gone out to make the cases. They have no idea. They're spoon-fed pablum. Part of intelligence is cultivating informants. When I was assigned to DEA or the FBI or ATF, one of my key responsibilities was to use my authority as an immigration agent to cultivate informants and cooperators. We need to go back to that. But the only way it's going to happen is to go out there and make arrests and deport people who violate the laws. And not because they have 15 convictions, but because they're in violation of the immigration law. There's nothing in the law that says you can't deport somebody unless he's killed 43 people and raped 5 kids who are under the age of 8 or something insane. Being here illegally is enough to get somebody out of here. And we need to go back to that principle. Yes, we should focus on criminals, no argument. But folks, we need to add randomness to the equation so that terrorists don't get this idea, and it's an accurate idea, that all you have to do is somehow or other enter the United States, and unless you get convicted, nothing's going to happen to you. We are teaching people how to circumvent a 13.9 billion dollar program that is conducted by Customs and Border Protection. And I would initially gear up that effort by bringing in agents from every other agency, including local and state police, the way we did for the Drug Task Force. And we need to have a hiring campaign. We should have probably double as many ICE agents as we have Border Patrol agents. New York City has 35,000 cops. We used to have well over 40,000, and everybody was wringing their hands about crime, and in fact, crime is going up. And I'd love to know how many people arrested in New York for crime have these bogus identity documents that dumb Blasio has been giving them. But the point is, the time has come for an immigration task force. It is time that we understood something that nobody wanted to recognize because of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. That our borders and our immigration laws are our first and last line of defense. Why in the world, as I wrote in an article, I believe it was for CAPSWeb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization, why in the world in this perilous era, if you were watching Star Trek, you couldn't imagine Captain Kirk ordering shields down, why then is Obama ordering shields down? We have an important tool in our arsenal, in our weaponry, called immigration. But immigration is a double-edged sword. When aliens, especially criminals and terrorists, are able to game that system, the immigration system becomes their tool. We need to take it back and use it as the weapon that it needs to be against those who would harm us. This isn't rocket science, and we don't need changes in law. What we need are leaders with a real spine and to put it bluntly, some cojones, you know? The idea that we are ignoring these laws so that terrorists are able to enter our country and embed themselves is an act of national suicide. And if you want to talk about compassion, you think about the people who die because of criminal aliens, aliens who are involved in drunk driving or drug trafficking or terrorism. Compassion? And by the way, you might be interested to know that the Pew Research Center, I believe it was yesterday, came to the conclusion, not a happy one either, that for the first time in I don't know how many decades, incredibly, folks, incredibly, the middle class is no longer the majority class in America. The middle class is now less than the majority. And when you look at what they consider middle class, I don't think of it as middle class. I think the cutoff is somewhere around $45,000 a year. I don't want to misspeak. Do your own homework. Hardly middle class. So if you wonder why the economy is going nowhere, if you wonder why people are disgusted and disheartened, if you wonder why we're in a mess, it's because we have intentionally dismantled the middle class to achieve the goal that Alan Greenspan set when he testified before Chuck Schumer April 30th, 2009, and referred to American highly skilled workers as the privileged elite earning a wage premium because they weren't being made to compete with foreign workers. And he said, if we could bring in lots more foreign high-tech workers, then we could get rid of that wage premium and greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. And that's where we are. We are getting to the point where the guy with the degree who's paying off a $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 student loan is not going to make more money than the guy who dropped out of high school. Wage equality. The elevator is going down, not up. So with all of this for the backdrop, all of this quest for cheap labor is getting Americans killed. The price of cheap labor are innocent lives and the American dream for Americans. And I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but for me, that is way, way, way too high a price. And when we hear this nonsense from Lindsey Graham and the others, we're fighting the terrorists over there, we're not fighting them over here. Anybody who believes that, to get on an airplane and fly to California and meet the people who were wounded or speak to the family members of those who died in San Bernardino. And I want you to tell them, look them in the eye and tell them, we're fighting the terrorists over there so that we don't fight them over here. Folks, they are here, the terrorists. We better start fighting them over here. And one of the most significant weapons in our arsenal are the immigration laws as they are without modification. All we need to do is put some horsepower behind it. More agents, funding, and a true leader in the Oval Office. That would be the solution. Nothing crazy here, folks. Common sense. Common sense. You know, it's always great to join you at the end of the week. I hope that what we discuss is thought-provoking. I hope you find it worthwhile. And I certainly hope that you pass along the information from my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. It's about educating our fellow Americans so that you guys can then hold our politicians accountable, because you need to remember this as a solid fact. Democracy is not a spectator sport. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the balance of Hanukkah, and I look forward to seeing all of you next week, same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next week.